And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to The Low Post Podcast, live from Los Angeles, California, where it is 5:30 Eastern Time. That means the first opening, real opening night of the NBA is about to be upon us. Lots of teams are playing tonight. This podcast will probably post tomorrow morning. So if anything crazy happens tonight, sorry, we can't talk about it. Joining me across the table, we did a post-game podcast last night. We're not going to talk much about the Lakers or Clippers this time. Brian Windhorst, how are you?
You know, I was thinking earlier today, I'm fine. You know, I was thinking earlier today, I was watching replays last night from the Raptors getting their rings.
Yes.
2 years ago, the Raptors, when they got swept by the Cavs, game three in Cleveland, LeBron hits a game winner. Pascal Siakam should have doubled, but he didn't. DeMar DeRozan gets benched down the stretch of that game. One of his final games as a Raptor, second to last game as a Raptor. Masai freaks out with Dwayne Casey after the game. Everybody in the room knows Dwayne's getting fired. There was 3-0. The series wasn't over, but essentially it was over. And I remember being in the Raptors locker room, and it was a very, very sad place. DeMar was upset. Dwayne was upset. There was tension because of the front office. There was frustration because of the way the game ended. And the next season, they won the title, which just goes to show how amazingly fast things can change in the NBA. And so as we sit here at the beginning of a seven-month season, just think about how much will be different and change in these 7 months.
That's why in my 35 wild predictions for the season, one of them was in 16 months. I gave myself probably more lead time than I should have, considering it's a wild prediction. There will be James Harden trade buzz. Now, I don't know if that's going to happen. That's purely speculative. But the Rockets just feel there's just a little too much stuff, a little too much stuff happening. And you imagine the counterfactual. I don't know exactly what happened between Chris and James, right? Who said what? Who asked for what? Who didn't ask for what? I don't know. Something happened. Chris was hard to trade. Maybe one or two trades in the whole league that worked. Maybe one that brought back a player that James wanted to play with.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't find that trade, I don't know what happens. And I don't mean to insinuate anything. I just don't know what happens. But like the point is, I could see a scenario where there is James Harden trade buzz in 16 months. I could see it fizzling out because there's no place that he would want to go where there's a suitable co-star and it's in a suitable market and he still gets to be the number one guy, et cetera, et cetera. But the NBA is like, you can say almost anything and it's not crazy. The Raptors got Kawhi Leonard for, I mean, look what they got Kawhi Leonard for compared to what the Lakers paid for Anthony Davis. And what the Clippers then paid to get Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. Now they got Kawhi Leonard for a year.
And the, you know, the Westbrook trade is complicated because they were also the Chris Paul, the money was taking on for Chris Paul. So it's not quite the same, but the price of poker, crazy.
Well, and Kawhi's, what people I think were pretty open telling the Raptors, it's probably going to be 1 year. Like you could win the title. We could win the title. It's probably going to be 1 year. They won the title and it was 1 year. So Anthony Davis almost certainly is not going to be 1 year, although you never know. Paul George and Kawhi are at least 2 years. I'm going to guess that goes well. They looked dynamite. The Clippers did without Paul George in the season opener. Let's talk about the defending champion Toronto Raptors. I'm going to call them that all year. And I'm going to do that for every...
And rightly so.
Every championship team I'm going to refer to for the following year is the defending champion until they're out. Because I just feel like we...
It's too hard to win them.
Yeah, we devalue the actual winning of the... That's the whole thing. The whole reason we are here is to do that, what they did. I was watching their opener against the Pelicans, the Zion-less Pelicans this morning. Boy, you know who stands to make a lot of money this summer after all the extensions that were signed, which is what we're here to talk about? Fred VanVleet. That dude is just flat good. I mean, he was just roasting dudes one-on-one last night.
So he was undrafted, and we're like, oh, okay, he's going to be an NBA player. And when he got the two-year contract that he's on right now, it was the Raptors believed in him, but somebody that you totally, fully believe in, you don't give him a two-year contract.
Bet on yourself, Fred VanVleet. 2 years, $18 million, which means he's not extension eligible this year. Otherwise,
most importantly, won't be restricted.
He's unrestricted. And look, it was one game. He's going to have a good – he started the first game. I think that's – this is what Nick Nurse did in the finals, right? Start Fred VanVleet. Just start him. Just start the second half of games. Just start him. And now he's just starting, period, for now. I think he's going to have a big year. I don't know what he's going to earn. I don't want to put a dollar figure on it, but it's going to be more than $9 million if he plays well all year. But even if he makes 20, and even with Siakam making the max, the Raptors are safe and with a max slot for 2021 when you know who is
yeah,
perhaps
a Brogdon
be a
would be
agent.
A somewhat comparable player to him, right?
Yeah.
Wouldn't you think that's what he'd be thinking about, that kind of contract?
Yeah, I think that's a good
like
call.
I'd like to have this kind of year and have that kind of contract.
I think that's a good call. And Kyle Lowry is not going to take 20 shots a game. Like, there's a lot of shots up for grabs there with Kawhi and Danny Green gone, and Pascal's. If by the looks of game one, Pascal's going to take a lot of them. I think that deal for Pascal is fine. I just love in the first game of the season, they open the season. Pascal's their starting power forward. He guards Drew Holiday for most of the game. They're just going to use him as just an all positional weapon on defense when the matchups allow them to do so. Like, you can guard a point guard one night, a 2-1. He's just going to guard whoever needs guarding.
Yeah, you know, I think it was in Serge Ibaka's snake session with Durant.
Sounds a little something.
Yeah, he was making snake, just to be clear. Durant kind of like gave sort of a left-handed compliment to a backhanded compliment, to be more left-handed. My wife's left-handed. I don't want to sound much. A backhanded compliment to Nick Nurse where he said, your coach isn't great with X's and O's, but he know what was, do you remember? Did you remember reading about that?
No.
He was talking to Serge. He's like, your coach isn't great with X's and O's, but he's really good at, you know, putting you guys in position to win or something. I was like, I actually think Nick Nurse is good at X's and O's.
I think he's pretty good at everything.
Yeah. he's a pretty experimental.
KD's got a lot of grievances to air. KD's ready for Festivus. He's ready for Festivus this year. He's got a lot of grievances to air. Let's bounce around some of the extensions rapid fire before Mina Kimes is going to make a cameo. First time ever on this podcast. I'm very excited about that. She says she wants to talk about how Ben Simmons is a cat person, which is not typical low post fare. Brian Windhorst, give me an extension and or a team linked to an extension that you want to talk about. I give you first volley.
I thought the Spurs did very well with DeJounte Murray. 4 for 64. There's some bonuses in there, but I don't know the health of his knee. And certainly the fact that he had just had a huge injury impacted his desire to get that money. But, you know, I thought Caris LeVert kind of brought the market down a little bit, and that made it difficult, I think, for DeJounte to overcome that. And he accepted a contract for less than I thought he would. I think the Spurs did well there.
It's interesting. That deal is being framed in those terms mostly as a steal for the Spurs. And I agree. I think DeJounte has a chance to be really good and just a complete menace on defense. Just, I don't want to be anywhere near that dude dribbling the ball. I wonder how many dribbles I could take against DeJounte Murray before I wouldn't have the ball anymore. Three? I don't even think three. If he were trying, I think it might be two.
Well, so Matisse Thybulle is like potentially he's like a wizard at taking the ball from people.
Yes. The Thybulle hype is out of control.
But specifically his ability to take the ball from you. He's a savant at watching you dribble and just taking it. You know? So, and you know, like Kawhi is incredible. DeJounte has super long arms, but in terms of actual picking pockets, Thybulle could be.
I mean, first of all, fans of The Ringer CEO Bill Simmons should expect a lot of Thybulle hype from TheRinger.com this year. Bill could not be any more all in on Matisse Thybulle. And Kawhi, I want to do, everyone does oral histories now. I think I've done like one oral history.
They're hard.
I did one when the Nets were going to become the Swamp Dragons. That was my one oral history.
That.
I want to do a mini oral history on the time Kawhi just took the ball from Ben McLemore two times in a row in the same game. And I think Ben McLemore died. I'm not sure.
I remember you describing him as like a shark.
Well, like, Simmons called him a sharktopus.
Oh, was that Bill?
Yeah, it's probably Bill.
I thought it was you.
But my point is, DeJounte Murray has a very limited NBA track record. I believe, someone told me this today, I believe he is the first person to sign an extension to his rookie deal coming off playing zero games the year before. So I get why people are saying it's a steal. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. Also, breaking Spurs news, LaMarcus Aldridge, the Spurs have fully guaranteed LaMarcus Aldridge's deal for next year, which eats away at some of their cap room. And depending on
why would they do that now, you think?
I don't know. I think it's a weird contract. Like, it was either they could have waived him for $7 million, which I guess is designed to be stretched over 3 years. So it's really like two and change a year if you waive him. But that's a big, you don't see guaranteed amounts like that big very often. I don't know. I mean, I take it as a signal that Pop wants to remain competitive. I know.
Yeah, but I mean, like, they'd still have him for this year. Is the return value on LaMarcus being content that he will not be a free agent next year, no matter what? That's worth giving up cap. I realize that next year's class is shallow. It doesn't mean that you don't want flexibility. I've talked with agents about this, about teams trying to value extending a player now. Like, for example, the Joe Ingles extension. Why?
It was one that I heard rumblings of. It was in my predictions column. It still surprised me that they got it done. It's creative. I think it's Utah saying, we're not going to be a player in cap space ever. Let's just sign. He wants another year. We'll give him another year. No harm, no foul. But it's $14 million a lot for age 34 Joe Ingles or whatever it is.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, again,
and I love Joe.
You've got a happy player, but he was not going to be a free agent next year.
And now LaMarcus is not going to be a free agent this summer.
But there's another guy on their roster who could be. And this is why I think this is interesting. And I wonder if this portends something or what.
See, I read it as portending that DeMar DeRozan still may extend with the Spurs. And they can I checked with the cap gurus. They can do that. He must opt out. He has a player option for next season at about $28 million a year. I think he has to opt out of that and then can extend off of this number. I take the LaMarcus thing as a signal that, again, the Spurs are like, you know, we're just going to keep running it back until we can't run it, until it's time to just let guys walk. But maybe not. I don't know. They obviously did not come to an agreement before the nominal deadline, which doesn't actually apply to DeRozan, but some teams treat that as a de facto deadline. You know, the Spurs are interesting, and I've seen John Hollinger write several times that they could be a candidate to make a win-now trade, you know, because Pop's still there. They have these two veterans. DeRozan's 30, I think. Aldridge is 34. Aldridge is older than people think. I think it's the opposite. I think you do not make a win-now trade. You do not trade out of the Murray, White, Lonnie Walker, Johnson, whoever future to upgrade the DeMar DeRozan, LaMarcus Aldridge present. That's a bad move.
You know, I thought they were – I mean, it's all moot now. I thought they were a possible Sabonis team, a trade.
Why is it moot? Well, it's moot until
Sabonis
the draft
is extended.
It's moot.
But I mean,
when
the Pacers were kicking around the market, I thought the Spurs. A Spursy player.
I'm
right?
not convinced that the Pacers were seriously kicking around the market. I'm not convinced.
Okay.
I think they made a couple exploratory calls, but some teams that for sure would have been on my list of teams to call if I were running the Pacers did not get calls about Domas being available. We're going to talk about the Pacers. But yeah, to me, the Spurs, you know, the DeRozan extension, it's easy for me to say I wouldn't do it. It's just easy for me to say, because when you extend a guy who's making 28, the best you're going to get is 25. That's the best you're getting. I don't want to be in the business of paying DeMar DeRozan $25 million to play on my team.
But my point is, I do think he was interested in extending.
He was. There's no question.
And so now you've extended Murray, which, okay, it's fine. And you've extended, for lack of a better term, you've now extended two guys.
We'll see. If DeRozan were to get to, if he opts out and becomes a free agent, this is why this summer is going to be so interesting. You have all these teams that have now, you know, Charlotte, Cleveland, New York, Toronto,
Atlanta,
holding all of this money, and a lot of players are gone. And there just aren't a lot of free agents. And you look at that, it's like if DeMar DeRozan opts out, who's signing him? Why would a rebuilding team like Charlotte, Atlanta, Cleveland, who already has, they just drafted two guards who want to shoot all the time. Why would any of those teams pay DeMar DeRozan any money to play on their team? The most fun story that will never happen is if Toronto signed him in free agency. That would be the most fun. I look at Andre Drummond. Andre Drummond, he's a big winner mm-hmm. of extension day, right? If you're a prime free agent, you're a big winner of extension day. Now, he's younger, substantially younger. I think he might still be, I'm going to look at it, he might still just be 26 or 27. He is 26. He just turned 26. So maybe a Cleveland or a Charlotte talks themselves into Andre Drummond, right? We need a center. We're young. You can grow with our core. I guess. I'm not that interested. At the price point that it's going to be, I'm not that interested. I think the big winners of free agency are the Van Vliets, Bogdan Bogdanovic, sneaky big winner. Evan Fournier has a player option for next season. If he has a good year, he plays the right position at the right age where someone's going to pay him.
Bogdanovic is interesting. He so impressed me in China. He did not look like a backup. But he's blocked there. There. Buddy Hield has now got a $90 million contract. De'Aaron Fox is a cornerstone for the future. They gave Harrison Barnes $80 million. Where is Bogdanovic going to fit there?
Well, I just think the answer is like you have to see what you can get for him in trade. And if I'm one of those teams holding a huge amount of cap space this summer and I'm looking at that unrestricted free agency market, and it is what it is, one of the things that I'm already starting to think, okay, what other ways can I spend my money? And by the way, one of the ways you can spend your money is not to spend it. You don't have to get to the salary floor.
Especially with 2021 being...
Yeah, you don't have to spend it. All you do, the penalty for not reaching the salary floor, as you know, is just to distribute the difference to your own players, which would be, that would be a great story. If a team just announced, we're doing that, people would be trying to get traded to that team that year, get a little extra money.
Okay, now, this is salary cap chapter 86, so I'm not... Isn't there an option that they can distribute it to their players, or it goes to the union and gets?
Don't
their...
complicate my dream scenario.
I may be wrong, but I thought
I don't
was
know.
Like,
yeah. My point is, there are alternatives to spending it. One alternative to spending it on unrestricted free agents is to trade for restricted free agents now, and then treat those as free agency acquisitions. Bogdanovic, I would be calling Denver about Malik Beasley, who could not come to an agreement with the Nuggets. Like, that's sort of a way of spending, instead of an offer sheet for those guys, or instead of reaching on a Drummond or whoever, go get one of those guys now, bring them in. That's an interesting move.
There's a couple of teams out there who need shooting, who I think Bogdanovic could be interesting for. I'll give you one right off the bat. New Orleans.
They do need shooting. They got a lot of guys.
And they have a lot of assets.
They do. I guess they do. Yeah.
Philadelphia.
They have a lot of draft assets for sure.
Okay. Philadelphia.
Philadelphia could use shooting. What are they trading for Bogdanovic? One of their young guys.
That's a problem.
One of their young guys. And what does Bogdanovic make? About 9, 10?
8.
8 and, say, yeah. 8 and change.
Yeah. I would just circle Bogdanovic and keep an eye on that situation.
Saric is another guy. All the restricted free agents who couldn't come to agreements with their teams.
So the Suns think that Saric is in great shape and that he could have a big year this year. But I didn't hear one word about a possible extension there, did you?
No, I didn't see or hear anything. Now, the Suns are a little bit of a black box to me. I don't have a lot of ins there, so I don't have people to call as much as I do with other places. People, do you ever feel like ticketing websites make getting to the event difficult on purpose? It's like they're so big they can get away with not caring about your customer experience. But SeatGeek is the one that changes all that. They have millions of tickets to live events in one place. A price match guarantee. You can search for sports, music, comedy, Broadway. They help me get tickets to Hamilton. They have everything you're looking for. One-stop shopping. You don't have to go to 12 different secondary market sites. It's all there. It rates each deal on a scale of 1 to 10. That's easy. It displays them on an interactive seat map with green dots for good deals, red deals for maybe overpriced deals. Easy to read. Every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets with confidence. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone. It is the fastest and easiest way to find tickets. SeatGeek will even give you $10 off your first purchase. Right now, all you need to do is use our promo code. Download the SeatGeek app today. Use promo code LOWE, L-O-W-E, my last name, the name of this podcast. Bam, $10 off your first purchase. That's promo code LOWE for $10 off your first purchase. The other thing I would do if I were a team with cap room is I would look up and down my roster and think, oh my God, we have no one to sign. Who can we extend? And so I think if I were the Cavs, I think I would think a little harder about extending Jetty Osman, for instance, than I did 48 hours ago. If I were the Hornets, this is a deep cut. I would maybe extend a guy like Dwayne Bacon, $8 million a year, $7 million a year. Just like, I got to spend it rather than going crazy on an unrestricted free agent. Why don't I take a look at this guy?
Yeah.
Just a thought, Brian.
Yeah. You obviously would rather sign your own players because it's easier to negotiate when you're not in the open marketplace. But yeah, I mean, this next summer is going to take some creativity. Also, remember, there's more ways to use cap space than just signing players.
Yeah. If you like a guy who has years on his contract, if you're at Charlotte and you like Dennis Schroeder for some reason, you can go trade for Dennis Schroeder. If you like one of the Mavs guys who makes $8 million a year and the Mavs decide that they're expendable, and you go get that guy. There's lots of guys. You like Kelly Olynyk. The Heat need to move off some money. Go get Kelly Olynyk. He's got $12 million left on his deal. Like, give him a shot. There's guys like that. I want to talk about another extension that you already brought up, and that's Caris LeVert. The Nets are up to something. The LeVert deal was 3 years, 51. Torian Prince, 2 years, 29.5. Mm-hmm. Kevin Pelton wrote it's the first two-year rookie extension in the history of his database.
Interesting. I've never thought of one either.
They continue to go short on years. They have clearly made an organizational decision that we are not going above three for anyone who's not a star. We are prioritizing flexibility, even if a two-year deal...
How do you explain the DeAndre Jordan contract? Well, how does that fit in there? I know what happened.
DeAndre Jordan is a star by association.
I know what happened. I'm just
He's like a publicist. He just comes with the star.
At $10 million a year. Okay.
Yeah. It's just very interesting that they continue to go short on years. And they have a decision to make with Joe Harris this summer. Dinwiddie the next summer, Jared Allen the next summer. If they retain all of these guys, they're going to go $30 million over the tax in two seasons. But if they retain them all on fair value, they got a lot of movable parts. I think the Nets are the best candidate among already good teams, teams with stars in the door, to try and go trade for another star. And their dream would be to do it. Well, they want to see if LeVert can be a star. And if he can't be, their dream would be to do it without trading LeVert. I just don't know if all those other things add up to enough.
Caris LeVert has had a whole bunch of injuries dating to his time at Michigan. For him to sign that contract when he did for that number could be huge.
That deal, the timing of it was weird. It was very early. And everything that happened on Monday.
His agent did subsequently leave the business to go work for the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Indeed. Shortly after that deal was signed.
That could be a factor in the timing.
That has certainly been speculated about around the league. That deal, in the light of what happened on Monday with Buddy Hield, 4 years, 86 or 94, whatever it is. Jaylen Brown, 4 years, 105 to 110.
103, I think.
Whatever. The LeVert deal looks like a heist for Brooklyn. Now, I understand you nailed it. The injury questions, HELOCs and security. I get why he would do it. It's $50 million. It looks like a heist. It's just those players are not X dollars better than him. No way.
Yeah, and again, Brooklyn doesn't have to even bid against the market. Like, now, look, Boston may have had a number that was going to do for Jaylen Brown all along, but from what I was hearing, Boston improved their offer significantly at the end of the negotiations. And one of the reasons why I think they did that was because they realized they didn't want to get into they saw where things were going. If Buddy Hield gets this, then our guys. So, which is why if you're Caris LeVert, you wait towards the end, ideally. But at the same time, I understand his injury history. And somebody says $50 million is here. I'm not looking down at him. I'm just saying it's the timing is what's, rarely do you see a rookie extension done in the summer unless it's a max extension.
Caught me by surprise, that's for sure.
Unless there's no negotiation.
I just think the Nets are piling up contracts and they're going to figure out what to do later as long as the contracts are what they consider value contracts. The Prince one, I'm actually surprised they extended at 14 plus a year. I didn't think they would get that high. He's a divisive player in the NBA, and this is a big year for him. He has been a divisive player. He can shoot. He has flirted with wanting to do much more than shooting. His defense has left everybody underwhelmed. He's a 3-and-D guy, but without the D so far. Does he have the tools? Maybe. We'll see.
The first thing I think about, and it's probably not fair, but the first thing I think about when I see a contract is if they have to trade it tomorrow, can they? I mean, not that they would trade it tomorrow, but how tradable is the contract? There are certain contracts you see where you're like, whew, whew, well, they're going to hold on to that sucker.
Yeah.
You know, and there's other contracts where as soon as they sign it, you're like I remember thinking this, as soon as Jay Crowder signed that contract, I said, my God, that's a tradable contract. And I think he's been traded three times on it, and he might get traded again on it.
It's another team. I don't think he's
Torian
not,
Prince is a, that's a tradable contract.
He's not an, Crowder is not an extension candidate just because he doesn't fit Memphis's timeline. Dylan Brooks is a guy they can extend. They can give him that up to that Josh Richardson extension. Now he hasn't proven that he's worth anywhere close to
right,
that.
Right. The second round pick.
But if I have cap room, if I'm Memphis, I'm burning this cap room is burning a hole in my, well, Grizzly Bears don't have little pockets like kangaroos. I don't know what, it's burning my hole in wherever. I would maybe think about that. The Nets are up to something. That's all I'm saying. What did you think of the Jaylen Brown deal for the Celtics?
I thought it was great for him.
It's a good deal for him.
Getting $100 million guaranteed. There's a lot I like about Jaylen Brown, but he hasn't shown the consistency. They are making a little bit of a wager. They're not paying him for the player he is. They're paying him for the player they hope him to become, which is always a little bit nervy.
That's what these are. That's why so many extensions are like, whoa, that much for that player, but yeah. you're paying for the growth.
Some of those are more risky than others.
This one, I agree with you. It's higher than I thought they would go. I agree with you that there was a cascading effect on Monday and Sunday as over the weekend as Siakam and then Hield went off the board. All of these other teams just said, well, my guy's the best guy left, you know, and he's going to get maxed as a result. I've heard some pushback on whether that applied in this case. I think it did. I don't necessarily believe the pushback.
His agent was actually in Boston. His agent lives in LA. So his agent had to have enough optimism at some point to fly all the way to Boston. The agent doesn't have to be at the place to get it done, but
they often do though.
Yeah.
Boston is now at the tax for next season. $130 million for the following season, 21-22, which is way over the cap. And I'm not sure how short of the tax because we have not seen the Daryl deduction or the Daryl dip or whatever people are going to call it.
Oh my
and that's for that. That includes no Gordon Hayward, no other signings of any kind. That includes they signed nobody.
And despite the Celtics being in a big market that churns in money, they are. I mean, they've paid the tax, but
they paid it.
It's not a bottomless pit.
They paid it last season. They are not going to pay it this season, come hell or high water. They're a little bit under it because they know what's coming. The following season, now this is like Tatum's max is kicking in and all of this. They're up already at $125 million, and that's no Smart. Smart expires by then. Smart's interesting because I bet in his heart of hearts he wants to start.
Yeah.
And he's not going to start to open the season. They're going to start Hayward, Tatum, and Brown because politically that's just what you have to do. And that's just going to be all of those guys together are going to be an interesting situation, even if Hayward leaves in free agency or if they let him walk in free agency after next season.
So the Celtics could make a trade this year, and Smart could be in that trade.
I don't think they want to trade him.
No, I know they
don't love Marcus Smart, but yeah. I agree with you.
He's a luxury with what their roster is.
All the focus has been on Hayward because his salary is so big, it allows him to go get a Kevin Love, whoever, you know. I don't think that's likely for various reasons. I think a Smart trade is sneakily more likely. I've been a Jaylen Brown optimist. I've been too optimistic about Jaylen Brown. I was too high on Jaylen Brown after the conference finals year. He was very up and down last year. He is not $20 million better than Buddy Hield unless he becomes a significantly better offensive player. Defensively, obviously, he's going to be really, really good and is miles better than Buddy Hield. But offensively, he's got to prove that he can play make a little bit. And that's been a slow, fitful development. Like he can straight line drive, maybe not as often as he should have last year because of all the competition to have the ball. Shooting has come and gone. Let's just assume he grows into a good shooter, not a great one, a good one. He's got to play for him to be worth this contract. He's got to make major, major strides as a playmaker.
Was with him for 4 weeks during the China games. the China World Cup, I should say. World Cup, not the China Games, the World Cup in China. And there were certain games where I was like, man, he's the reason why they won this game. And there were other games where I was like, did he even play? You know, that's kind of his game. There are times where you look at him and say, wow, is he doing a ton of things out there to help us? But one of the things about Boston, a lot was made of the fact that, you know, they hadn't extended a guy in 10 years. One of the reasons is because they feel like they've been able to sign guys who they do, who didn't extend with them at their number. Like they did that with Avery Bradley as an example. They did that with Marcus Smart. It's probably another player.
In restricted free agency. Yeah. Let you go to restricted free agency, test the market.
And they'll say, well, you know, we pretty much gave him what we had offered him the year before. Who knows whether that's true?
You bring up an interesting point. I wonder if the Celtics are begin, and this is just me wondering. I have not had conversations with them to this effect, to be very clear. I wonder if they are becoming sensitive to the narrative, and maybe it's not even a narrative, maybe it's just a thing, that they treat players as assets. That sounds almost too harsh. In the wake of Isaiah Thomas,
yeah,
and some of the other dramatic and the stuff you're talking about of go test the market. Go test the market is smart. That's what you should do. That's why restricted free agency exists, because you have a cudgel and teams are going to be freaked out about tying up their cap space and offer sheets. And chances are, in a lot of cases, you're going to get the same deal you can get. When you go into the $100 million range like you did with Jaylen Brown, you're probably going to get a deal that's maybe a little more than that, maybe not, in restricted free agency. So why do it now? Why extend? He could break his leg. He could have a horrible year. He could shoot 28% from three. Why do it? And part of the reason why teams do it is so that players feel valued, right, so that the market, larger market, views you as a place that values players. And I just, part of me wonders if Boston got tired of reading they haven't extended a guy since Rajon Rondo, got tired of reading that Anthony Davis's dad went on TV and said, well, look what they did to Isaiah Thomas. My son would never play there. I just wonder if that played into it at all. I wouldn't blame them. I'm not saying it's a bad thing if it did.
I don't know if that enters into their arithmetic, but it's a real thing.
Good use of the word arithmetic.
It's a real thing. People have said to me, you know, well, Boston, you know, blah, blah, blah. To me, the more thing about Boston is when it was clear that the Brooklyn trade became the gold mine that it was. I don't know if you can say the finish line, but they're pretty close to it, like
yeah,
having used those assets.
Yep.
Are they happy with where they are?
That's why the Jaylen thing and the assumed max for Tatum that I think you will earn. Now that this is your team, this is the team you have built. It's a year ago. It's certainly not the team you thought you were going to build. The team you thought was Kyrie Irving, Anthony Davis, and whatever's left over from trading for Anthony Davis and go. Horford is probably on that team mm-hmm. still, right? That team is gone, and now you have Kemba making the max, Tatum making the max maybe, Jaylen making close to the max, Smart and Hayward sitting there. Like, where's the wiggle room to upgrade that team? I don't know. But that's why Danny Ainge gets paid a lot of money, to find the wiggle room to upgrade that team. But as you said, the finish line is in sight, and it's in sight when Tatum signs that max. Like, okay, you got $90 million, $100 million committed to three guys. Are they good enough? Are the Jays good enough? If they're not, the Jays aren't good enough. But as you said, a lot can change. In 3 years, Philly could look a lot different. In 3 years, Milwaukee could look a lot different. Is Kevin Durant going to be the same player? You just don't know what the landscape of the East is going to be. Maybe that team is really good. Maybe that Boston team is good enough. I don't know. I would guess probably not, but who knows? Can we talk about the Pacers?
Yeah.
The Pacers fans are so mad that I picked them to miss the playoffs. I'm being accused of being biased against small markets. I like small markets. I got nothing against small markets. I was one. You and I actually were two of the first people on board the Paul George, Roy Hibbert Pacers train. I picked them to beat the Knicks in that series.
Loved covering that team. Loved covering that team. Spent many, many, many days in May in Indianapolis. No days in June, but many days in May.
My pessimism was based largely on the fitting a lot of new pieces onto a roster that had enjoyed a lot of continuity the previous year. And I don't know what's happening with Oladipo. Now, if he's ahead of schedule and he's going to look like himself, then that prediction is going to be wrong. And so be it.
Well, here's the thing about Indiana. There isn't a day that goes by where Indiana doesn't worry about money. They operate in a world where they are always going to be the 24th highest payroll or 23rd or 27th. And so they, by doing this deal with Sabonis, they will not keep Sabonis, Turner, and Goga. Probably, unless Goga's a bust, you know, but I do not think they will keep them. Now, they won't trade them now, but a day doesn't go by where they don't worry about money. And I think that you have to figure that into your arithmetic, that
yep.
that part of Kevin Pritchard's deal is that. The other thing is there's some worry about keeping everybody happy on that roster. There's some tensions there, even before Oladipo comes back. So hopefully Sabonis is now thrilled about his extension, and that little skirmish will relieve itself. But
I floated this with some people in the league over the summer after I got back from Europe. One of the things I like to do is go through cap sheets in the lead up to a season and say, okay, who are the veterans that make sense for extensions? Not the guys coming off rookie deals, but because it's a good way to think about player and team and where they're positioned. And I thought, I wonder, Victor Oladipo makes $21 million this year, $21 million the next year. Then he's a free agent. If I were the Pacers, I would go to him and say, we can offer you 120% of your salary, so about $25.5 million, and then 8% raises or whatever it is off of that for three additional years we can tack on. You're coming off a traumatic injury. You don't know how you're going to look this year. What about it? That's a conversation I would have. I don't know if Victor Oladipo would entertain that, but I would be trying to entice him into entertaining that if I were the Pacers.
Fascinating.
Fascinating indeed. I like the Sabonis deal. I thought it was a good contract. I think Sabonis is really good. And now comes the interesting part where the cool thing about Turner and Sabonis is that they legitimately want to make it work. They both want to play 32 minutes a game and be starters and have a chance to make all-star games and things like that.
They both have essentially the same contract. Sabonis is a couple million more, but it's essentially the same deal.
And they want to make it work together.
Which I think was, I don't think Sabonis was signing for less than what Turner got.
I don't think it was a coincidence either. They want to make it work together, which is cool. They like being against the grain a little bit. Like, we're going to go big and squash people. Although Miles Turner's not really a squasher. He's more of a finesse guy. Domas is the squasher. Domas will squash you. I just don't think it's going to work well enough for them to coexist for a long time. And I do think if Sabonis had not gotten extended, I think he was far more likely to be the one traded. Now, I don't know which one. I think it could be either. I think they're obviously a team to watch on the trade market going forward. I mean, they're if the Raptors are good this year, there may just not be very many guys that are interesting that are on the trade block. Like, who else is going to be out there? CP is going to be hard to move. Beal's gone. Love has to prove he's healthy. Blake Griffin. This Blake Griffin thing in Detroit is not starting out well. And if he's hurt.
Well, they just can't afford him to miss.
If he's hurt, I was talking to a GM on another team today. If Blake is seriously injured, now it doesn't, they're optimistic that that's not the case. But let's say he is. Let's say he comes back and it's a serious injury.
But the press release on it was.
It's discouraging.
Nebulous.
And nebulous.
Worrisome.
Nebulous is worrisome. This GM was like, there are two scenarios when you go Sixers process. Number one is when you're mediocre and your best player gets hurt and it's serious. And number two is when you've traded a bunch of draft picks and the deal is a disaster, aka Bynum.
I don't know if Tom Gore is.
He's not going to.
Yeah.
But that's how bad it would be. I can't think of many worse scenarios than Blake is damaged for a while and comes back and he's not the same. And as a result of my desire to stay relevant, I've paid Andre Drummond the max. I can't think of many worse things than that.
I know, but Gores loves Drummond. But, you know, David Griffin, was talking about Zion's injury this week. And he said that he compared him to Blake. This is a very interesting. A lot of people took out of this interview. One of the things about Griff that I find remarkable is he's one of the most optimistic men I've ever known. Sometimes his optimism is you're like, well, I really admire that. And sometimes his optimism is like, come on, Griff, what are you trying to sell me here? But he's talking about being optimistic about Zion's health, and people sort of really focused on when he brought up that, oh, you know, Zion, you know, he's in great shape. He doesn't need to lose weight. He's an elite athlete. They said something else fascinating in there. He said that, you know, Blake Griffin, it took him a while and some injuries to sort of get his body in the position to where he, you know, was able to be healthy for a while. He used the word stasis. He said it took a while for Blake to achieve stasis with his health. And to me, that was a fascinating thing for him to say, because what they're basically admitting is, we know that Zion's going to have some injuries. We think there's a possibility Zion's going to have some injuries. And Blake still is fighting injuries. And I point something out. Zion is 40 pounds heavier than Blake was as a 19-year-old, 20-year-old.
It was notable to me how aggressively they pushed back on the weight. They didn't really push back on it, though. They pushed back on him being out of shape. They didn't push back on the weight. Griff said something like his body type is unique, but he's heavy. He's built heavy. That's what he is.
I agree with that. By the way, you can go talk to 10 elite trainers, and they can give you 10 different answers here. I'm just saying, like, Blake Griffin, unfortunately, has fought injuries his whole career and is not the player that he was when he came into the league. And Zion had a knee injury in high school. He had a knee injury in college. He had a knee injury in summer league. He's got a knee injury now. And I know that not all of them are related. And, you know, his shoe tore and all that stuff, I get it. But that's worrisome. And just like I thought it was worrisome when the Clippers gave Blake a 5-year max. And they're able to get out from underneath that risk, which set the tone for where they are today. I'm worried about the risk.
That season opener from the Clippers, those Harkless Jamichael Green minutes made you think, I think Harkless is going to start when Paul George is healthy. That's my prediction, that they're going to start Harkless. So Beverly, George, Leonard, Harkless, Zubats/Harrell playing most of the minutes. Those first four defenders are just, that is a menace to society. I mean, that's going to be really hard to score against, and they're going to be super switchable. And
what happens if Iguodala chooses the Clippers, not the Lakers, if he gets bought out? Now everybody and their brother says, oh yeah, it's Lakers signed up. But how do we know that?
I don't think we do. I don't think we know that at all. I'm rooting for Iguodala to choose Denver or Utah.
Denver would be amazing.
Just to give them one of those guys.
He played in Denver before.
Yeah, I know. But I don't think those are going to be in the cards. But the Clippers looked really good, and Lou is a wizard, and that was a fun game. That was a fun. I like this LA rivalry.
I'll tell you one thing. The Clippers marketing machine is really poking the Lakers in the chest.
Yeah, they're leaning right into it. They're not even it's not even subtle. Like, I was talking to one of their coaches after the game. I was like, yeah, you know, it's pretty subtle. I was like, man, it's not subtle. It's overt. LA Our Way is overt.
Yeah, that's their slogan, LA Our Way. In their intro video yesterday, I can't remember, they had like little phrases like, you know, we're not glamour, I'm not remembering right, but they had like little phrases that...
Something not glitz or something like that. Yeah, grit not glitz, yeah. Grit not glamour. Yeah.
So they're marketing themselves, hey, the Hollywood folks could go to the Laker game. The real fans of LA should come to the Clipper game. It won't work in that regard, but...
It's going to take the Clippers a long time of being really good.
About 10 championships.
But by the way, there were rumors of a Jennifer Aniston appearance at the game last night. I don't think she was there.
I didn't see her. I mean, that's somebody you put on the scoreboard, I think.
They put Kate Hudson on the scoreboard. Jennifer Aniston is just an A-plus celebrity. She is as famous as a human being gets.
She joined Instagram, posted a photo of a friend's like reunion dinner.
Yes.
And she got 50 million followers in like 15 minutes. That's A-plus fame.
She was the it person for a long time.
She still is.
She still is the it person, yeah. I guess. And she has this new show on Apple TV, yeah. I think.
And here she is, Jennifer Aniston, the promoter. No, I'm just kidding.
No. Oh, that would be fantastic if I could get Jennifer Aniston on the podcast. But not quite as good as Jennifer Aniston, maybe. I don't know. Walking in the door right now.
Oh, wow.
The host of ESPN's new podcast, ESPN Daily, fan of many sports, fan of many things. Mina Kimes, how are you?
Hi, I'm good. Wow, she's quite an intro.
From an ESPN standpoint, she's an A+.
She's an A+ celebrity. Yeah.
We're talking about
how Jennifer Aniston is an A+ celebrity because she was supposedly coming to the Clippers game last night, and there was a buzz afoot. I don't think she came though.
I don't think I'm more like the who's the guy who worked at the coffee shop? Gunner. The
Gunner.
One who that's I think my role in the ESPN ecosystem.
You're at worst Monica, at worst Courtney Cox.
At worst,
yeah,
I'll take that.
The best friend, by the way, is Joey. Joey is the most consistently entertaining
friend.
I think everyone agrees the worst friend is Ross, right?
Ross is terrible.
Yeah. No one is a Ross stan.
No. No, Ross is terrible. The show has apparently become problematic.
Is it problematic? Teens love it. There's like a millennial research or
it's problematic.
Next.
And it was actually the lack of minority representation was problematic to like 1995 me.
Oh yeah.
But now there's other problematic, like the fat shaming of Monica is now considered problematic of childhood Monica. Anyway.
Okay. In retrospect, yeah. She used to wear the fat suit, I remember.
Yeah.
And yeah, there was a lot of strange things.
So one of the reasons I want to have you on other than you're delightful is this year I want to have more people on in the ESPN talent pool, particularly who are not in the NBA bubble, because
great.
I think that perspective is important. So what is interesting to you about the NBA this year? What do you you're not in the nitty gritty of this every day like the nerds like us. What's interesting to you?
Well, first, longtime listener. I mostly listen to NBA podcasts, including your guys'.
Is that right?
Yes. And here's why. Not because you're great, but it's not because you're great.
You just want to be away from the NFL.
Well, I don't need to listen to NFL podcasts not because I know it all, but on our general shows like Around the Horn and High Noon, Highly Questionable, and the stuff I do, you have to be conversant across sports, primarily NBA and NFL.
Which, by the way, I don't know how anyone does that.
It's hard.
Lives in the weeds of one sport. I don't think I could name 25 NFL players.
No matter what you think about Stephen A. Smith, I don't, like, say whatever you want to say about him.
Brian, by the way, is pointing. He's doing
whatever
the wind horse point.
He was here,
right now.
So you could be pointing at
another A+. You wouldn't, Steve and I.
I don't know. We're often compared to each other.
It's amazing the way he can be as well versed and be able to have a take, so to speak.
So what's interesting?
It's hard. Yeah. Today's episode of ESPN Daily features Tim Bontemps talking about Ben Simmons and whether he'll develop a three. And I generally am obsessed with the Sixers. I married into a Sixers family. Being from Seattle, I'm a agnostic, I guess. I mean, I root against the Thunder, as any good Seattleite does. But I have sort of adopted the Sixers a bit through my in-laws. And for a just casual NBA fan, I'm actually a pretty serious NBA fan, but they are the most fun, interesting team to root for, I think, from a personality level, from a basketball level. As an NFL analyst, there's a certain kind of basketball I prefer. I really like defense. I really love physical play. So it feels like
she
they're perfect for me.
She definitely is East Coast in that regard. She's shedding
Eastern
her
Conference. Eastern
she's
Conference
shedding her,
NBA
she's,
oh, yeah,
she's shedding her
no.
Western Conference roots. Eastern Conference basketball.
I'm no bandwagon LA fan. So I enjoy them. I love, this is the one thing, well, there are a few things I love about the NBA more than the NFL, but one thing I really love is the interplay of personalities that's manifests itself on the court, that you can actually see these players in their faces and how they treat each other and react. And I love that the Sixers' two biggest stars have personalities that don't mesh at all. I love watching that play out. I love the way that, I just love everything about them.
It's time for some straight talk. You wouldn't spend more to get the exact same thing, would you? That seems dumb. Unless you're getting tickets to the big game, who would? So when I tell you that Straight Talk Wireless runs on the same 4G LTE networks as the big guys, but charges you a lot less, well, you see where I'm going, right? Just take that deal and run. And the $45 unlimited plan from Straight Talk Wireless just got even better. Now you can get 25 gigs of high-speed data and nationwide coverage on America's largest, most dependable 4G LTE networks for just $45 a month. No contract. Plus, you can pick up the latest smartphones, too, like the Samsung Galaxy S9, all with no mystery fees, no credit check. Don't pay more. Get more. 25 gigs more. It's time to ask yourself, why haven't I switched? Straight Talk Wireless. Everything for less. Only at Walmart. First 25 gigs at high speed, then 2G. See terms at straighttalk.com. Sometimes for inspiration, you just have to look up. For more than 60 years, the Goodyear blimp, that beautiful thing, has fueled greatness on the gridiron by providing aerial coverage of some of the most legendary moments in college football history. When the Goodyear blimp rises above a stadium and inspires players to reach higher and rise to the challenge of the game's biggest moments, now it's your turn to go further with Goodyear. Discover tires made to rise above the rest. Learn more at Goodyear.com. Goodyear, more driven. Do you care to share your theory about Ben Simmons?
Well,
you have a few theories about Ben Simmons.
Well, the one first theory, so the episode is about him shooting, and I love that story in general because I generally love stories that are internet-y but true and important at the same time. Ben Simmons not being able to shoot a three is, it's very memeable, it's kind of comical to the outside, but it's also like has incredible basketball significance, right? And I like stories like, it's kind of like, in the NFL, in our pale imitation of NBA Twitter, there's an obsession with Mitch Trubisky and whether he can throw to his left, which is funny, but also serious for Bears
fans. Is he left-handed or right-handed?
He's right-handed.
So throwing to his left should be almost, that's like your...
He just doesn't do it really well. And
he plays for the Chicago Bears?
You can look
Bears?
At spray... Yeah.
Okay.
Well, you aren't kidding about that, 25.
No, 25, I might max out at 25.
Wow. So anyways, I love that story for that reason, but my theory, well, where to begin? Okay, so one thing about Simmons and Embiid is Ben Simmons, to me, there are two kinds of personalities in this world, and there are dog personalities and cat personalities. I think you can guess which is which in this scenario.
Embiid is a dog person?
Clearly.
I think Embiid has a dog that's middle name is Hinky, I think. I have to look this up, but he has a dog, and it has lots of names, but one of them is Hinky.
Well, Ben Simmons had those weird, ugly $10,000 cats. Do you remember that?
No.
When he came to the USA and he spent like, he dropped like 20 grand on two hairless
The hairless cat.
I remember
why?
That. He yeah. does like a hairless, he has, he likes hairless cats.
He looks like a hairless cat. Can we acknowledge that? Like,
I always felt that Chris Bosh looked like a raptor.
Oh, yeah. No question.
So Ben Simmons is a cat person.
He looks like a cat. He acts like a cat. When they interact, like, so when Simmons made the three against the Chinese team and you could see Joel running over and Ben Simmons was clearly so angry at him for making a big deal about it. You remember? And he was hugging him and Ben Simmons was just like, get off of me. Everybody stop looking at me. It was like watching a cat and a dog. Like when they interact.
A cat does not want your affection.
Not interested.
A cat doesn't want human affection. A cat just wants to be left alone.
And Joel Embiid running towards him remind me of when I come home and open the door and Lenny greets me. And maybe this is why I love Embiid so much, you know, for other reasons.
So the Sixers were number one in my league pass rankings. And I got some pushback saying their offense is going to be clunky to watch, to space. I'm like, how?
Who cares?
It's Joel Embiid.
Yeah.
He gets into a confrontation every other game. He's so far in Andre Drummond's head. Yeah. That the Pistons should just bench Andre Drummond when they play the Sixers. He fouls Andre Drummond out in 5 minutes. He almost makes people cry. I want to watch every second of that.
Was it from last season? Was it 2 years ago when he flopped, like hilariously flopped, and then knew it was going to be a technical, and he gave the T sign to the ref while
yeah.
he was playing in the lane?
I want to watch every second that Joel Embiid plays basketball. It's irresistible. I'm pushing like a low family move to Philadelphia. I am becoming dangerously obsessed with the Sixers.
And you like defense.
I do like defense.
They got my boy from, I'm sort of a Washington Huskies fan. Not really. I mean, like, I'm a fake college basketball, really barely at all.
Okay.
But
it's fine.
I'm excited to watch them on defense. My other theory.
Tybull. You're talking about Tybull.
Yeah, sorry. Yes.
The Tybull hype continues. The Tybull hype train is like,
he's great.
Simmons is all in. Simmons is like, he's a combination of prime Scottie Pippen and prime Kawhi Leonard, and it might be insulting to him. He actually Googled MVP odds from
Just, oh my God.
It might be just in
well,
case.
Not to keep bringing this back to the NFL, but the 2019 Sixers remind me a little bit of the 2017 Jacksonville Jaguars. Yeah, Blake Bortles was quarterback, but that defense was still really fun to watch. Like they were cocky, they had this great personality, they were doing historic, they were so good they could win games on their own. How is that not entertaining?
Well, I loved, I mean, growing up, I'm old enough that I appreciated the 86 Bears. There were issues here, but the Ravens defense that you could not score
yeah.
against, where it felt like they had the best player at like seven different positions
right.
on defense. It's like, what are you supposed
so
to do?
How do you feel about the ESPN RPM Real plus minus.
I do use a lot to drop takes but, on around the horn.
it projects the Sixers to actually finish third in the East.
Well, just then they need to just start over. They
yeah.
need to start over
clearly.
And tweak the math.
Okay.
Yeah.
Who's second? Boston?
Yes.
That's Boston's going to be pretty good.
Come on.
I think Philly is built to win a playoff series. To your point about defense, I think they're built to win rock fight playoff series.
I am very high on Carson Edwards. I feel like I tweeted something
traded
absurd.
To the pick that became him was traded by the Sixers.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
In the Tybull deal, I believe, right?
Yes. The Sixers moved up four spots to draft Tybull. And the payment to move up the four spots, they swapped first-round picks. The payment was the 33rd pick, which became Carson Edwards. Now, let me just point out, doesn't mean that they would have – he's making fun of me.
I'm like Eric Trump to your Donald Trump Jr. in that SNL skit. We're doing – no, I'm talking about the SNL skit.
That makes me Tiffany, I feel like, in this
Maybe,
scenario.
Yeah.
I'm definitely bringing some Tiffany heat.
You know the SNL
spot.
Skit where Eric just watches what Don Jr. is doing yes. and imitates it? That's a very good skit.
I'm putting my hands in my pocket. the pick that became Carson Edwards doesn't mean that the Sixers would have taken Carson.
Okay,
Edwards.
Yeah, right. Yes. But there is a connection.
But trust
there.
Me, the Celtics fans who are rejoicing.
They're high. He was great in the preseason. Yeah. I mean, he's
made eight threes
like my
in one
size.
Quarter. This is what the, but to your point, this is like the Hawks traded, Alexander Walker and Jackson Hayes for DeAndre Hunter. Well, no, they traded 8 and 17.
That's
you don't
right.
know who the Hawks are going to take with those
we always do this in football too. We're like, that pick became Patrick Mahomes or whatever, you know, and it's such a silly way to look at teams and
it's just fodder. But you know, the Sixers and Celtics have the scar
of
tissue
course.
From the Fultz trade, and now add the Horford maneuver. And then they're determined to get Carson Edwards in there as well. As
that rivalry is the Philly Boston is fantastic. I mean, I remember being at the remember the game where Bellinelli hit the shot to send it into overtime, but they thought it was a game winner and they fired
yes.
the confetti.
Oh gosh. Oh, that was so bad. Yes.
And then, but it's
the
either
jokes.
That game or the next game.
It wasn't really that close, right?
His foot was like inside the line. It wasn't on the line.
Yeah.
But the trash talk between Marcus Morris and Embiid in one of those games where Marcus Morris was holding up 3-0 or 3-1 or Adam Morris. It was like that rivalry. Now Marcus Morris is gone, but how about Marcus? How about Marcus Morris just smashing the ball? In the dude's face in the first preseason game of the year.
He threw an elbow, which he got away with. In other words, he didn't hit him and wasn't like called for a tech. And then he was like, okay, I'm still getting thrown out. I'm bouncing the ball off.
That
Justin
clip
Anderson.
Should go in the Hall of Fame because
it's so egregious.
He didn't swing the ball through and like make it look like an accident. He put the ball in front of him and smashed it directly straight into the dude's face. He like mushed it in his face. That I've never seen that before. Mm. Hey, while you're here, can I tell you a career highlight for me that happened last night? That dovetails
yeah.
with my let's talk about not NBA nerd stuff. So I go in the Clippers locker room after the game, looking for Jamichael Green of all people, and Lou Williams marches out of the shower. You know, he's all dressed. He's marching out. And I did this story last year about Lou and Montrez and their chemistry and their relationship. So he knows me now. And he sees me, and he starts marching toward me like fast. Like, hey, I got to talk to you, Zach. I'm like, uh-oh. It's because this could go in a lot of different directions right now. And he goes, you got to check out my new album. I clipped you into it. And I was like, hold on, what happened? He was like, I clipped you saying yeah into one of my songs. I'm gonna get in touch with your people. I was like, I don't have people. I have no people. You can get in touch with me. But then he just walked out. And this is what Lou does after games. Lou walks into the night. He just like, he didn't even stop moving. He just keeps
walking. What Lou does in the night has been the subject of many stories.
Well, when he wants to leave the arena, he doesn't stop to talk to you. He moves and talks to you and he just drops this thing that many people overhear and there's like, whoa, Zach. And I'm like, I need more information.
And
he's
then
like,
he just walks
and
off.
He's just like, you're not getting any more information right now.
He's
I have plans.
So cool.
So I'm in our Lou Williams rap song.
Saying yeah, that's not like a catchphrase of yours.
Yeah, that's odd. That's a good point.
I have
it's
no more information.
Memorable.
But I just shouted, this is the crowning achievement of my life.
Can you, so like, you know, he's in the studio. So I picture there's like a studio. There's like a board with like 7,000 buttons on it. They're listening to headphones and their heads are bouncing, you know, and then get me low. This needs low, you know, like this.
Oh, I thought you meant get me low is like a lyric,
yeah,
like
yeah,
get low.
Get low. I need a low. Yeah. Right here.
Speaking
of, they had it apparently.
Have you ever used get low as like a I just led
Jalen. Jalen still says that every time he sees me to this day.
Did you, speaking of samples and songs and catchphrases, did you see last night Kawhi went, hey, and it was immediately incorporated into Blurred Lines?
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty well
done. I will say this about Kawhi. He totally embraced, I'm a fun guy.
Love it.
And with the Terminator thing, which he was paid for, but still, what it do, baby? He is
he's leaning in.
He definitely leans in.
Yeah.
I like it.
I like it too.
Maybe he is a fun guy. I've never hung out with Kawhi. I don't know.
I wouldn't know.
Well, who else would give me one other thing that's interesting to you this season? From like a fun NBA perspective.
Yeah. Well, my other Ben Simmons theory I didn't get to. So there's the cat dog dichotomy, which I think is very important to understanding their team.
You're a dog. You have a dog.
I'm a dog
famously.
Person.
I have a dog. Mina's dog.
I have neither, but what do you think I am?
Cat.
Yeah, I think so.
No, I'm a dog person.
No, you might be a dog person. You might like dogs.
He's like very persnickety.
I mean, it's cat vibes. It's okay. Yeah. It's not an insult. Wow. Ben Simmons is a great player. There's nothing.
Okay, continue your. Now that. Well, I'm very upset.
Yeah. No,
continue
your.
I don't even think it's really that arguable.
Yeah, I know. It's pretty obvious.
Yeah. And I'm not saying that you can't love a dog and be a.
Yeah,
a cat.
We can coexist. Ben Simmons and Joel coexist. There's nothing incompatible about cats and dogs necessarily. You're not a hairless cat. You know, if that makes you feel any better.
There's cold vibes coming.
I know.
He's really going poorly.
Yeah,
this is a big mistake. I made a big mistake.
Now he's swiping.
We need to get Arnovitz. Arnovitz back on
playing with a ball of yarn.
I think Arnovitz would completely agree with us.
Yeah, honestly. I know your podcast is crazy popular, millions of listeners. If anyone disagrees, speak and let us know, because I don't think it's going to be more than one or two people. I really don't. And they're probably your relatives or something.
Look, we had cats growing up in our house.
There you go.
I named my cat Snowflake, but I thought I which is now taken on
entirely. Yeah, I know. Entirely, now that would be, like, was your cat easily triggered?
All right, Ben Simmons.
Theory. Okay, so the episode today gets into, of course, the theory that he shoots with the wrong hand and that whole thing. And Tim gets into it. And we talked about it and didn't make the podcast. My theory about that is that I'm drawing on my own personal experience. Ben probably just thought it would be cool to be left-handed when he was a kid, because I remember growing up, I'm right-handed, but I was like, man, I wish I was left-handed, because
the story here is
you stand out.
He is right-handed, but at some point in his past, switched to left-handed.
Nope. So as Tim explained, nobody knows the origin of the left hand.
Like, he talked to his high school coach.
Yes.
He talked to his trainer.
There's no clear reason.
And it's even been NBA Twitter and has thought, hey, maybe you should do a Tristan Thompson, right? And go to the right hand.
Yes. And then, like, you know, when he shoots free throws, or like he seems to favor, you know, the other hand. Yeah. I just think that at some point growing up, a young cat like Ben Simmons thought a cool thing for me to do would be to use my left hand, because I can relate, because I wanted to be unique too as a kid. And I tried to write with my left hand. I tried to force myself to be left handed for like a full month in grade school before I gave up.
Wow.
He just never gave up. And here we are. It's a huge problem for him.
Did you win the Mario Kart race? I can't remember.
Oh, yeah. Twice.
On Katie's show?
Twice.
It was pretty impressive, actually.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Who were you? Mario?
I was Luigi. I'm classic Luigi personality. Katie was Mario.
She's a dog, Luigi.
But
you're a cat,
fun fact,
Mario.
About the race, I only relearned how to drive a year ago. So I didn't drive for 10 years. Living in New York and and so I had, when I moved to LA,
literally never got in a car.
Never got in a car.
Never like drove to the Catskills. Never went to Orlando to go to Disney World. And
your husband can drive, I'm assuming.
Yeah. Yes. And they're Ubers, right? So people always are confused when I tell them I didn't drive for 10 years, because as a reporter, we have to go to odd places. I just took public transportation. I got it's actually a benefit to not drive, because you can get sources to drive you and they're loose-lipped. I rented a car for the first time last year.
All these stories where you've gone out into the country.
So, yeah, I did not.
I'm remembering now. That your Luka Doncic feature, you're in his car. He's driving too fast in Spain,
scarily on his way to get nachos at the Hard Rock Cafe.
See, that was a warning sign right there. Nachos.
Is Luka
a cat person or a dog person?
He's dog.
Yeah, Luka's a dog. I can see that.
he's lovely. He's very funny. He's very weird, and I don't know if that's really come out yet. I think he's still kind of
he doesn't like doing like you can just see when he does interviews. He just I don't know if something happened before he got to the NBA, but he tightens up. He doesn't like like in interview settings. I've
it's
talked
a shame,
to him a little bit, yeah,
because he's really funny. But yeah, the nachos thing. I actually some people in the NBA call me to ask about how much junk food I saw him eat. Which is really weird.
Wow.
He also bought me a Snickers bar. I remember that very vividly. But anyways, the first time I ever rented a car was to go to Zion Williamson's hometown because I was supposed to do this big Zion Williamson profile when he was in college, and he canceled the day before, which was great. So I was in North Carolina. So the ESPN was like, go do a ride around, get whatever you can. So I went to South Carolina. And then for the tournament, I was like, well, I guess I'll go to his hometown and try to learn some stuff about him. Turned out it's a classic, like, being from a city thing where you're like, everything's near each other. Then you look it up and it's a 2.5 hour. So I bucked up and I rented a car and I drove all the way to Spartanburg, South Carolina, met his poetry teacher, but it was really scary for me. I'd never like rented
you going, were you going 80 miles an hour or were you going 8 miles an hour?
I was going super fast.
Really?
Yeah.
You just jumped right back in?
Because it was like country roads.
Okay.
Yeah. And I didn't – also, I was like, this better be worth my time. You know, better get something on Zion.
So you're all in on the Sixers.
I'm not all in on them being successful. I'm all in on them being entertaining.
Oh.
What do you want to say about – what can we say about the Daily? Are you enjoying it so far?
I am.
Is it grueling and much more work than you anticipated? Is it fun?
It is fun. I'm going to use this to put you guys on the spot and say I'd like you to come on.
We already talked about it. Yeah. So I already volunteered myself.
It was a crazy week to launch because it's the NBA opener, the World Series, and the halfway point of the NFL season. So that it's been a lot. But it's good. We have a lot
There's no good time to launch. I think it's just, in sports now, it's just which busy period do you...
That's true.
Have you talked about the Astros thing? I haven't listened to every episode yet.
I did. Actually, this morning, so at the end of every episode, I have kind of a little monologue type section, and I talked about it today. So we've covered the NFL, NBA, and now that baseball.
That is a very strange story. What possesses this person?
Well, I think more than that, what possesses the team to immediately issue a statement calling the reporter a liar and rising to his defense? It's always puzzling to me when teams do that kind of thing in any of these leagues, rather than just simply saying we're looking into it, which is gets everyone immediately off your back. I find that very weird.
So the Daily is going well. You're killing it.
Oh.
Everyone's already listening to that. I don't need to say that they should listen to it. Brian Windhorst, the Hoop Collective, we just recorded something for that, and everyone listens to that too. So, you know, look, when you want me to come on, I'm ready, Mina.
Anytime.
I'm ready. I'm ready. All right, thank you guys.
Thank you, Cat Person.
Hey.
Cat Low.
Check out our brand new podcast, ESPN Daily, hosted by Mina Kimes, who just came on this podcast. She's the best. Monday through Friday, Mina takes a look at the most interesting stories at ESPN in just 20 minutes, in and out. Listen and subscribe now to ESPN Daily wherever you find your podcasts. The Low Post is presented by Goodyear. Discover the possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.